Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, Critical Hit fans, are you a subscriber of Loot Crate? What's Loot Crate, you ask? Well, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box that everyone will love. It's filled with geeky goodness. And Major Spoilers is full of pop culture and geeky goodness, which is why we're happy to have Loot Crate as the sponsor for this week's episode of Critical Hit. Pop culture is full of brave new worlds and societies in flux that don't always turn out for the best. And June's theme will be exploring some of the ways things can go wrong with dystopia. Featuring classic RoboCop, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, and The Matrix. Oh, that sounds good, but wait. They also have new faves like BioShock Infinite and Fallout 4. There's also a cool figure in this box. Oh, so many cool collectibles, and of course, a dystoporific monthly t-shirt. Yep, look it up. It's in there. Dystoporific. Now check this out. Here's the best part. For less than $20 a month, you get 4 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and a whole lot more. And if you want to get in on the dystopian-themed Loot Crate, you have until the 19th at 9 o'clock p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. You will not be able to experience the awesomeness that is coming in the dystopia crate. So, right now, head over to lootcrate.com/critical. That's right, lootcrate.com/critical. Enter the code critical and save $3 off any new crate subscription. Thank you, Loot Crate, for sponsoring this episode of Critical Hit, and let's get to it.
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members. Thank you for your support of Major Spoilers and the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions to podcast@majorspoilers.com, which means that this week it is a mailbag episode. People have been asking for this for quite some time. When are you going to do a mailbag? When are you going to do a mailbag? And it's like, well, as soon as we have enough built up, we will answer some. And I guess some things got away from me because at times when we sit down to play, it's like, I want to play. I want to play this game. I want to get through this adventure. Mm-hmm. And I guess a bunch of them piled up, so now we have a bunch of emails to get through. So over the course of the, I don't know, next couple of months, you will have a lot more mailbags. And remember, if you want your questions answered, you do need to send questions to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I don't have a Tumblr. I don't check the Tumblr. So if you're sending them to a Tumblr or a MySpace or a Facebook or anything like that, they're not included in here. So the only questions to podcast@majorspoilers.com get answered. And our first one comes from Christopher, who says, Legacy of Ghosts has been an awesome journey so far. Little Sparkle has been extremely interesting additions to the party, as well as Sakaar. I have two questions, the first being for Rodrigo, the second for the players. Rodrigo, when coming up for names of the lunar entities, did you ever have a specific pattern or rule you followed, or was it more going with the flow? One of my players commented a while back that a lot of my settings' primordials names sounded like they were straight from the Void. Name of the Nothing, Memory of the King, I guess these are the ones that he used. And I thought it was an interesting coincidence since most got named before I started listening to Critical Hit.
I mean, there are titles. That's really the unifying feature. You know,
King of Town.
Yeah.
Emperor
they're,
of
they're
cities.
Kind of like, they're generally kind of creepy sounding titles. They're, you know, and what it implies is that entities that don't have names or transcend names or whatever, right? So you will find in other fiction media, which either inspired me directly or inspired other things that I kind of looked into, that you find things like that. And you know, an obvious example that I think a lot of people are familiar with is the Cthulhu mythos, right? Like the King in Yellow, that sort of thing.
The Bag of Hammers.
Yeah, like an entity doesn't have a name, they just kind of have a title because nobody knows what it could possibly actually be.
All right. For everyone else, let's start with Sam, and then we'll go to Matthew, Brian, and Rob. Mm-hmm. Are there any plot hooks on your adventures that you wish you had a chance to explore further? Sam?
Like our adventures so far?
Yeah, I think that's what they're getting at.
I mean, yeah, there's tons of stuff that I kind of assume that we'll get to eventually, like in terms of the Salamander's Coil and what they're up to. I'd love to know what the deal is with those weird musical crystal eggs that we're carrying around.
Yep.
I assume that will bite us in some spectacular fashion later. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything specifically, but.
Okay. Matthew, what about you?
My answer is no, but not for the reason that you might think. And the reason that I say no is that, we've been gaming with Rodrigo now for like half a decade. And a lot of times the hooks that are left unhooked come back around and usually catch us right in the eye. And because we spent the better part of 2 years toying with the, and he was never heard from again. And it's like, oh, ha ha. And then it comes to the end and it's like, stab him in the heart. But secondly,
Now that didn't happen.
No. I wasn't speaking literally. I was speaking metaphorically.
No, listen,
stabbing.
Because when you say that, people are suddenly going to say, oh no, Torque was stabbed in the heart. Oh,
I'm not talking about Torque. I'm talking about Smith. But, so from a player perspective, there are hooks that I still have, and anything that I may or may not want to touch on is not necessarily something I don't treat the game necessarily as time sensitive for most things. There aren't a whole lot of situations where there are things that I'm like, there's no way I can bring that up. It's no longer valid. It's no longer going to work. 2 years down the line, we could have a discussion and think, oh, yeah, remember that 357 episodes ago when this happened? Yes, that is totally driving this bit of thing that's happening right freaking now. Why? Because Rodrigo let me say that. That's exactly what it is.
Who's next? Brian?
I'd say there's quite a few extra new worlds out there that I'd like to poke around in and explore. And who knows, maybe we'll still get the chance.
But. Yep.
There's the nest and the knot and the egg carton, and the salad fixins, the toaster, the toupee. The toupee, yes.
Rob, what about you?
There's a number of parts of Ket's backstory that I actually kind of wanted to delve into more. I wanted to actually deal with his family a little bit more than we did. And I actually really am interested in what's going on with the gods at this point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, because we
kind of abandoned
changed the dynamic up there quite a bit and haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I think I would be more interested in what is the Queen's Rebellious Daughter and everyone really doing behind the scenes. But, I mean, supposedly we will get to that, or hopefully we will get to that. But if not, I'm okay with things left unsaid, because it does let you, when you're on the exercise the cycle, or at your jazzercise class, it gives you something to think about, right? What would have happened? What would have happened if we would have had those twin perfect stars and did all these different kinds of things? It just brings up a lot of questions.
Fan fiction or the theories of what could have, should have, or maybe did happen that we didn't see.
Here's a good one. I'm listening to episode number 352 right now, and the gang that the group is fighting are a bunch of street thugs. This is one we get a lot, and I know that it's been addressed before, but it's good to bring this up a couple of times. They're fighting a bunch of street thugs, trying to shake them down for their valuables. This is a group that has negotiated with or killed gods, battled with the greater fae, and saved the world on numerous occasions, but they're getting pressed by these five gang members. It seems odd from a power creep perspective. Rodrigo, from a world-building suspension of disbelief perspective, how would you normally address this in-game to keep players feeling immersed in the quote-unquote reality of the campaign?
Well, what I would usually point people to is, did any of you guys see Spectre? The James Bond, the latest James Bond movie, right?
Yep.
So did you guys like that scene where all the guys are like shooting James Bond and he's just like catching the bullets with his hands and then like eating them and then like spitting them back at him? Like, you know, James Bond has had, I'm guessing, 47,000 movies at this point, and he doesn't get any better at not being shot. In fact, some would say that since Daniel Craig took over, he gets shot a lot more. Mm-hmm. So
what you're saying is, since Sam joined our group, we're not as good as we used to be. We're going to get shot.
Sam joined your group, you've been stabbed by thugs a lot more, but that's mostly just a thematic.
You also have to drink Heineken now. No more martinis.
Oh, darn it. But this is something this has come up before about, you know, and I think you've addressed it in a couple of other different places. I don't know if it was on the Major Spoiler site or other places, but you've kind of addressed that.
Yeah, we talked about it. We talked about it, I think, in a previous mailbag as well. And really, what it comes down to is there's a series of things. First off, the leveling aspect of the game is artificial in so many ways, right? It's like, as you level up, so do all the monsters. So leveling up only gives you more powers and more options up to a point, and then you kind of end up with about the same amount of options most of the time. Furthermore, that leveling up creates this false sense of like increasing in power, which is sometimes very harmful to storytelling, because if your characters only get more powerful and it means that sort of more mundane threats can't hurt them, it takes out a huge amount of storytelling space, right? It's like, well, they can never be, you know, attacked, like killed by an army of mundane soldiers, because if a single mundane soldier can't hit them, then 200 mundane soldiers won't hit them any more than that, right?
Right.
And then lastly, it has to work both ways, right? It's like, characters could have found a situation in which they were able to take out a god in single or in combat, then it stands to reason that with enough knives and arrows and magic, a bunch of people would be able to take them down as well.
Well, so, I mean, if you look at video games, don't you power up as you play the video games to the point where you get to the end of a level and you defeat the boss on that level, and then you go and the next level is full of goons again, and you've got to beat up the goons until you get to the next boss on that level. I mean, it's kind of that same thing.
Yeah, it really.
This
what
is
it,
actually
what
kind
really
of the opposite of power creep, because power creep would be the characters, to me, at least getting stronger and stronger and stronger. This is actually that sliding scale where as the character's skills expand, the skills of anything and everything they face likewise expand.
Well, and really, you know, if you think back way to the time when everybody beat up a god, there were clear mitigating circumstances to it. There was a time and a place and a moment in which that was possible, and the narrative was very clear on that. It's not that they just happened to be. It's not that they were like eighth level and that's when you start beating up gods. Actually, I don't know that they were even eighth level at that point. It's just that that's what the story allowed. Likewise, if you are in an unfamiliar place in an alley that has been specifically set up to ambush you and you're in someone else's home turf and they've got the drop on you, it makes a lot of sense that even seasoned adventurers would have some problems.
So I've actually thought about this a lot, and I feel like the designers of D&D have considered it a fair bit, because I assume that a lot of the monsters effectively that we're fighting are custom, because 4th Ed is really bad about bounded accuracy. The idea that after a certain level, like a goblin never will hurt you, or a Kruthic or whatever.
Oh, sure. All the monsters or all the enemies that you guys fight are the appropriate level.
Right.
And everything, they're just reskinned to be something else. Mm-hmm. And that was actually true from the beginning, except for Kruthics.
Yeah. Sure. there's definitely, like, I played in games where we reached, where, like, that really didn't have that aspect, where once you've reached a certain level, like, it's like, no matter of, like, scum, unless they're, like, really, really good scum, is ever going to be able to hurt you. And, like, there's certainly an interesting flavor for that. Like, you know, I've played in a game where we like rolled into a town and we're just like, yeah, we're gonna like, we basically own this town now. Please leave us alone because we're level 18.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, that was that. But like, and that was kind of funny and fun. But like, there's, you know, different, like fifth ed, I feel like, has made it much more clear that like, no, enough goblins should be able to kill you at any level.
Well, and even in Critical Hit, there have been circumstances where I'm just like, well, here are a bunch of untrained thugs that don't know, or random things, monsters, whatever. They don't know what they're getting themselves into. You guys just beat them up. Or
right, yeah, becomes, that scene at the docks.
Or it becomes a skill challenge where it's like, well, you guys are going to come out of this on top. What's more important is who has the football right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there, to some degree, for me at least, when it comes to a metafictional narrative, thinking about that above anything else, actually, for me, and again, I'm not questioning anybody asking the question, it's a valid question, I think it's a good question, that to me kind of, it doesn't ruin it. Ruin is a bad word, but it would damage my enjoyment of something if I were thinking, wow, why is Mal Reynolds having a trouble with this fight? When he clearly beat up the operative with only one hand in that one sequence in the movie, what it really boils down to is, you know, in real life recently, the U.S. Open tennis champion that everybody says is she's like wonderful, she's the best champion in the whole universe, and she lost because someone else showed up who was of an equal skill level. And she lost. Had this been a narrative, had this been a Rocky movie or a Karate Kid movie, that wouldn't have happened. But because of the nature of reality, somebody had a better day with a tennis racket, and so she lost. That's really what it boils down to for me is I loved that moment where Rodrigo's like, yeah, there's six guys here. By the way, little Sparkle and Sakaar totally kicked their butts. That's wonderful. But if it were that every single time, I think that the narrative would lose a lot of its, what's the word I'm looking for? Fun, I think.
Yeah. Here's one I think maybe Brian or Rob can address. Hello, friendly geeks.
Hello. Not Brian and Rob then.
I'm preparing to start a first one-player campaign for my 8-year-old son. I'm reskinning the plot of Star Wars, which he hasn't seen, as a fantasy setting. I planned a lot of NPCs to help him out. One is R2-D2, looking Defender. One is Obi-Wan Kenobi with a ton of healing spells. I'm also planning on drastically simplifying the rule book, which is written at much too high a level for him. So here's my question. What are the most basic, most stripped-down rules that you would use? That's the question. He does have a statement that says, I'm committed to 5e and I want to include ability scores, hit points, and armor class, and rolling damage. Other things like move speed, encumbrance, language, etc., I will either handle narratively or eliminate altogether. Are there rules you think have hidden importance that I should keep a little crunchy for him? Initiative, for instance. I guess my question initially is, and I want you guys to address this, why are you committed to 5e?
Mm-hmm.
Why not go to the Star Wars Roll 20 system, or just do Fate in a Star Wars area?
So Fate, or I mean, Hero Kids, which is pretty
much Hero Kids is a lot of fun.
Dungeons and Dragons, slim, you know, designed to be slimmed down for kids.
Yeah, and is that? That's Drive-Thru RPG has that.
Yeah, Drive-Thru RPG, it's on there.
Yeah, and it's a great system. I mean, mm-hmm. I've got it and have read through it and everything. And I think for kids, my son is also 8. For him, he would latch onto that system much, much more than having to do the, as you say, the crunchy stuff in here.
I mean, yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I've got really nothing to add. It's like,
oh, you don't?
Why that? Don't attach yourself to a system that you have to change when we've got a ton of other systems that are going to do exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would you reinvent the wheel, basically?
And I'm amazed. Yeah, you really need to do... It's hard to say that you really need to do your research, but that's kind of what it's happening because over the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, as I've started to explore all these other systems, it's like there is a system for everything.
It really is.
And you will be able to find the system you want without really just saying, well, I want to play Dungeons and Dragons. What you really want to do is play a role-playing game, and there's a system that will meet your needs. So beyond the
I'd actually recommend the Fantasy Flight Star Wars game, as it's very simple in the rules, and simple in the rules in the way that like really empowers the DM, because the dice, it's not like actual numerical dice. It's like symbols. Success.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's all, it's going to be pretty easy for a kid to keep track of, slash, you know, the DM to adjudicate.
Yeah. So I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Brian? Is there another system that he might want to look at?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, if he's wanting to stick with 5e, I would just, you know, stick with the basic mechanics of skill rolls to hit rolls and damage. If he can add, you know, a static number to a d20 roll, then that's probably all he really needs. I wouldn't worry too much about mechanics beyond that too hard. Yeah, I mean, I would honestly just probably say, you know, check out Hero Kids, because it basically does a simpler Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that'd be the main one I would suggest.
David wraps it up by saying, thank you so much for your help. I like Sam.
Aw, thank
you. You're the one.
Let's see. That'd be nice. Here's one from Mitch. Hi, guys. I love the Critical Hit podcast. Started listening from the beginning again for the fourth time. I have a question about something said during an episode in which Torque had a bad guy on the ground questioning him. The guy started questioning why the team was trying to save the natural plane. This was around the Tuberville episode. Torque said, what you are doing is called psychomount. You talkie guys like to question our beliefs. I can't find that word anywhere and would like to know more about it.
Psych them out, I think.
Yeah,
psych
them out. I don't know. Matthew, do you recall that? Or is this just Torque trying to use a big word and not using the right word?
Psycho. Well, if I was to ask the Torque part of my brain, I think Brian's assumption is probably correct. What it sounds like is psych them out, because sometimes when you talk like Torque, it all kind of leans on each other and gives it sort of a southern accent, but it's not really southern, because even though lots of planets have a south, I would actually, I'm almost certain that that's what it was psych them out or psychen them out.
Or psych them out. What do you say?
Honestly, this is a thing that comes up repeatedly. I can't tell you what I said to my wife an hour ago. So without going back and listening to myself, and sometimes I'll listen to episodes and I'm like, wow, I just said something clever and I literally do not remember ever having said that or having the knowledge. So it's entirely possible that there was something else to it.
I just think that happens a lot, because there was another person, I don't think it's in the emails that we have in this, because someone had just made a comment about, I kept thinking that Steven was saying phase step, and I didn't know what phase step was until I finally looked it up and said phase step. So I don't know if there's a question between I don't know if it's a compression issue or what, but I pretty much say phase step.
Yeah,
and I guess I can hear it a little bit, but you know, sometimes you may just hear
things. I've never looked at it. I can see it, and you know, you do. Like, I can see phases.
Yeah.
Kind of.
There's not really a guttural stop with there. So
yeah.
I thought it was phase.
Oh, you stop it. Here's one
I'm
from
serious.
Nicholas.
I'm.
Here's one from Nicholas who says, "I love the podcast. Despite my initial reluctance to listen to other people play games, I finally started back in July when a friend recommended I listen to the Fate Modern City episodes to learn about the new system, and I loved it so much I've been on a binge ever since, and try to use your Amazon link whenever possible. Two questions. As much as I love the main season, do you think you'll do more off-season shows with more role-play-friendly systems? I'm an old Wadmavib Tim fan, and would love to see what mayhem anyone can bring to that setting." Well, I'm sure
World of Darkness, World of Vampire Darkness. The Masquerade?
Yes, that's what it is.
I think there was...
That's what it is. Good job. See, Sam, you do much better at understanding that than Matthew does when we do dueling reviews. Good job.
No,
I'm sorry. I don't see the point of reading an acronym that isn't an acronym out loud.
I mean,
it's entertaining.
Yeah, we'll do whatever, you know, whatever strikes our fancy. We may have some other stuff coming up, so you'll just have to keep listening for that.
Yeah.
My first experience was a Vampire the Masquerade. Let's see. Let me get to the, let's see. It says, he's talking about a character that he did. He says, after a few months of play, I found myself uncomfortable with how well I was getting into the character's mindset and arranged with the GM to kill off the character in the story. I later learned the book explicitly forbids players from using that path because of a degree of perversion and deviation. Have you ever had a character you grew uncomfortable playing for whatever reason? What was your solution? Sam, let's start with you. You and Rodrigo used to play Vampire Masquerade stuff when you were in college, right?
Yeah.
So have you ever had a character you grew uncomfortable playing for whatever reason, and what was your solution?
You know, I don't think I've never had that. I played characters that are absolutely terrible people, but I don't know. Maybe it says something about me or what I get out of role playing. But I never was like, "Oh, this is I've gone too far." Yeah, I mean, I've had characters that I got bored with. But I guess the solution with the game that Rodrigo and I played in terms of Vampire was that the game only ever lasted about 10 sessions. So by the time, you know, you'd kind of settled into a character, the world usually ended or someone killed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody else? Anybody else have a character that you just were like, for whatever reason, you were uncomfortable playing, Matthew?
Yeah. And what it often comes down to is when you're putting together your idea of a character, and when I say you, I mean me, because I don't necessarily come at it the same way. I try and come up with something that will be specific, something that will be fun to do. And you know, when we started this, Rodrigo's like, "What do you want to do?" I'm like, "I don't know. Can I be the dumb guy?" And that is not a decision that I regret. It is a decision that caused me a lot of woe over the years, but. Yeah, it wasn't so much a character as a system that we played in college, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of it, but one of the game mechanics was to be as literally offensive as possible, to be terrible, terrible people and say and do terrible things. And after a couple of sessions, it got really, really awful, and it got to the point where even at, 20 years old, as a callow, jerk-faced, loudmouth youth, I'm like, we've gone a step further than I'm comfortable with, and I backed out of part of that game at least once because there are things that you just don't want to do anymore. You come to a point in a character where you're like, this thing that I thought would be wonderful is really getting on my last nerve, so I'm going to change it, or I'm going to I've had at least two characters that you kind of engineered into an, oh, darn, I'm dead.
Yeah.
It happens.
So you just suicide it.
That's the fastest answer, depending on who's running the game. There's also the option of doing something incredibly stupid that you know will have consequences. At one point, I had a character who I managed to engineer into getting bitten by like a were animal.
Oh, and then you had to go chase goats on top of a mountain.
Right. Change the whole thing. No. Please. Yeah. Change the whole nature of that thing.
Yep.
Steven?
Yes.
Brian, did you have a...
Shut up.
No, can't say I've really ever played the real jerk character that I've really been uncomfortable with playing in any game. No, I just haven't had that experience.
Okay.
I guess.
Rob, what about you?
I'm trying to remember. I feel like I've been in a couple of games where that could have happened.
Yeah.
But I want to say most of them never really got far enough off the ground for me to truly embrace what the character was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when I played World of Warcraft, I had a character that I had built up, and great. I was like, the character's okay, but really he's not progressing in the direction that I want to go. Instead of just quitting him and deleting him, I had him set down in Thousand Needles, and this was before they changed the flip-flop the world. So
before they flooded the needles.
Yeah, before they flooded the needles. So ultimately, he ended up drowning naked in Thousand Needles. So there you go. Here we go, one from Brittany, who says, I have two one-shot encounters under my belt. I ran a first skills challenge today using Rodrigo's rules, and everyone loved it. It was in 5e, so there were some skills differences, but I did have someone use history correctly, so there was that. My question is this. How long did it take you guys to harness your awesomeness into finally honed gamers that you are 2 years ago, and I assume today? She's, I think, behind on our listeners, so. I don't know. 2 years?
For Steven, you have all of evidence.
You have 300 plus episodes to listen to see how that happened.
I would say for the rest of us,
it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so Sam, when did you first start doing RPG stuff. Do you remember how old you were?
Oh, yeah. I started playing in fourth grade.
Okay.
Nice.
So that's 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
So 7 years ago.
But though, I mean, it was pretty loose back then. It was like, this is a great story. Our elementary school gym teacher ran a elective course called Step Back in History, which was his euphemism for D&D. I don't know how that possibly got approval, but it was the greatest class I ever took. And then afterwards, after like the year was over, me and like some of my friends were like, what is that? That is awesome. We need more of this in our lives. And so, yeah, then it was a quest to like get our parents to drive us to like the sketchy gaming stores to buy the PHB and Monsters manual. And so like I would say most of what I did in elementary school was pretty, and like middle school and high school for that matter, was pretty unsophisticated. I got into magic pretty soon after I like got into D&D, and D&D kind of fell to the wayside. And then I would say I got back into tabletop gaming my freshman year of college.
Okay. Matthew, what about you? Do you remember when you started doing RPG stuff?
I can tell you almost exactly to the day when I started, simply because my friends and I, my friend Ted and my friend Bird, who was a jerk, and I started playing, I think it was AD&D, immediately, like within a week or two of the 1983 debut of the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So you figure September of 83... somewhere in the September, October of 83 realm is when we started. And
I think that probably
it was
been
entirely because of the cartoon.
It was 83. So that's 13. Yeah. So I think that's probably about the same time that I picked up the red box and then later the blue box. And I'm pretty sure I had the other box, but my mom could not find that one.
The orange box.
Was that the other color? I thought it was green or yellow. I forget
which
one.
Red, blue, green.
It must've been green, 'cause I don't have the green one. I would go to like the B. Dalton's at the mall, and they had a section on the role playing games that was all Dungeons and Dragons modules. So I'd be able to just buy the Fiend Folios and those kinds of things and take them and read them, because I thought the art was kind of cool for, you know, 1983, 84. And I thought the reading about the monsters was neat. So, Rodrigo, when did you start getting into role playing games?
I probably started when I was like maybe 10 or 11, I was playing in like chat rooms on AOL.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in and of itself kind of the B. Dalton of my generation. Then kind of nothing except for that and like video game RPGs, which, you know, have similar mechanics but are not really the same thing. And then basically until I got to college, and then I came through it into it through Vampire LARP. So I kind of had like kind of this like weird sideways skid into tabletop role playing, which is to say that I tried most other things first before I actually got into that.
Mm-hmm. Rob, what about you?
I did D&D off and on from like late elementary, early middle school,
really?
Okay. Through high school. Like, I mean, like nothing regular, no more than like two sessions for anything. Just, you know, had a group of friends that wanted to do this, did it. Okay, we're good. Actually really started playing when we started forming Cat G in college.
Yeah.
In my sophomore year.
Brian, what about you?
Oh, I think I picked up the basic D&D box set, which when I got it, it was a tan box. Fifth grade, maybe sixth grade. Yeah, before that, I mean, it kind of was eking into it, had the HeroQuest board game, and I really liked the Lone Wolf Choose Your Own Adventure style game books, and those really got me into the whole
genre. I mean, besides Rodrigo, had you guys played other D&D type games before you got into D&D, or have you played them over time? I mean, Brian obviously has played a bunch of them or is familiar with a bunch of the rules.
Yeah.
But
there was Star Blazers. We played Star Blazers and Villains and Vigilantes. Basically anything.
Oh, I remember Villains and Vigilantes. I remember that.
Never played that.
Anything with a superhero theme, I have probably played and hated.
Heroes
played V&V. Heroes Unlimited, like three different versions of Champions. Oh my god, I so hate Aberrant.
I played.
You cannot pay me to play Aberrant. If I wanted to be a freaking mutant, I would go and I would find Chris Claremont and I'd be his friend, and then he'd write me into the book.
I suppose that's true.
D&D was my first role-playing game, though. Much like Rodrigo, I came to Northwestern, got into Vampire LARP, and then from there kind of tried all the different White Wolf games, so Mage and Werewolf and Exalted, and played some Vampire Tabletop as well, Star Wars D20 and the Fantasy Flight version, and then a bunch of very weird indie stuff.
Yeah,
did indie. You just say Malaysian Werewolf, or did my...
Mage and Werewolf.
Okay, I'm like, I've never played that game, but for a moment that sounded...
Do you guys remember a game? I'm pretty sure it was a game, but it was, it was like a spy kind of thing. It was almost like LARP, and maybe it was one of the early LARP things, but it was like, there was this manual of, here are things that happen when you get hit in real life, and you were supposed to set up elaborate traps to trap your friends. I'm going to have to dig around for it at my parents' house.
Spycraft?
It might have been Spycraft.
Spycraft is like a D20 game where you're different, like, spy classes.
No, this was actually like...
There was real early James Bond role-playing game, but I don't remember.
It felt almost like a LARP because it was like, okay, here's how you can rig a trap, and it would have you create a pendulum out of real things and set a real pendulum going.
There was a game that I played when I was a little kid that was like a cassette tape that you
played. I'm going to have to look for it because it wasn't necessarily role-playing, but now that I think about it, it was probably really LARPy, and I bought it because I was like, oh, look, it's showing you how to set up like a... Not a real bomb, but it was showing you how to set off a shaving cream. So it would.
It was
like,
the Anarchist Cookbook, Steven.
No, it wasn't the Anarchist Cookbook.
I'm sure
it wasn't a role playing game at all.
I actually bought it at the Gatekeeper in Topeka when they were across the street from the university.
Oh.
And so it was like 82, 83. Yeah, they had a lot of game stuff there back then. So I don't know if maybe somebody out there can remember it, but it's like I remember one was like, here's how you can set up like a quote unquote car bomb. And it was basically you wiring up a noisemaker under the hood so that when someone started up the car, the noisemaker would go off.
That would
indicate that the person was
not
had been
fly
blown
today
up.
At all.
No, it wouldn't. And that's why I'm like thinking.
A more innocent time.
Yeah. Yeah. So if anybody out there knows what the hell I'm talking about, let me know.
Please, nobody ever knows what the hell you're talking.
Bite me, Rob. Here we go. That's kind of what it was, but it was. I don't know. It's hard to explain. Eddie from New Zealand says, "Dear Critical Hit team and Rob, as a soon to be DM and a massive Critical Hit fan, I have been well equipped by you guys to deal with problem players and the like. But I don't remember this question coming up, so I'll ask it anyway. My soon to be party wants a puppy. After letting a few of them look through my monster manual, they kept coming up to me with some monster with the same line of, 'Hey, this monster looks cool. Give it to me as a pet.' I know that leveling monsters is a pain and I can't afford to go out and buy the books with Beastmaster, Rangers, or Familiars. Is there any other way I can give my players a pet?"
Well, it depends on what they want out of the pet. Items. If they actually want the pet to be something that will fight with them and, you know, be combat effective, then no, you're probably going to need some books. Mm-hmm. But, or to like fudge it. And I mean, like one thing, I've seen games where you have a pet where it was basically, it can take the aid another action. And like, that's super useful and can make other people feel awesome by just having that. You could also have a pet that like is just literally a dog and can like maybe help you if you're caught on ambush by barking. And is also a pain because, you know, you can't like scale a mountain with this dog. I've also had been in that game. And then there's the like, I sort of have a pet in that it's a dragon and he shows up when he wants to and then goes away. So
nice.
Yeah, I think that I would want to maybe do a little digging as to what they want from a pet and why they want it. I mean, if it's something that they want the flavor of being a traditional ranger, or they want something to serve as, you know, a familiar or kind of a mascot, that's one thing. But if they are wanting a pet because they want to be able to, you know, summon a whale above their enemies or something, then your approach is going to be different. The first one you can do almost entirely narratively. The second one you can tell them no. But I am not allowed to speak about asking for and getting pets in this game because Rodrigo looks at me with the big mean eyes and then we don't talk for like a month.
Anyone else?
There's there's probably other options that can be used as a pet. If you're playing D&D, if you're playing some version of D&D, there's probably summons. You can basically, essentially, then your wizard can just summon the same creature whenever they use that spell. And you can say, it's like, hey, Toby the magic leopard is back, you know? And it can have conversations with them while it's savaging their enemies or whatever you want. But yeah, if the players are just like, I want this thing that is a strict advantage and isn't covered by the rules, that can get very difficult. In fourth edition, one kind of easy way of doing it is just having that thing count against the XP that the party gets. Mm-hmm. So if you have, a level 10 party, you throw in a level 10 monster, and then you just subtract that monster's XP from the XP calculations of the party, and you should be roughly okay. Mm-hmm. But you also have to remember that monsters, probably in every edition, have a lot less options than players do. So if that critter gets hit by something and they die, then that's probably about it for that guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's why actual pet things that are built into the system, like summons, like figurines of wondrous power and things like that, have something that says, oh yeah, by the way, you don't lose the ability to get this thing back on your side in a fight if it dies.
Yeah, that's fair. Since like I played a druid for a while and had a sweet direwolf, and it just took a bunch of hits. It died. And that was a really sad moment, but that it's hard, even with like a lot of buffs and classes that are supposed to be good at it, for your mount or animal companion to be as effective as a PC is going to be.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think fourth edition does that stuff pretty well as well, where it's like, this thing just has all your buffs, like, or all your stats basically as far as defenses. And then if it dies, it doesn't die. Like, it's just like written in the book, it doesn't die. You know, more like games like your 3.5 type stuff, where you are actually like looking through the book and picking out a pet. It's like, I mean, you can still, as part of the narrative, build that into the thing, but chances are you're going to have to deal with that at some point.
Pets die.
That's true. It's just your responsibility.
There you go.
Why?
Because they do.
Why?
Here's one from Nathan, who says, I'm a future person, and I have a question I'm hoping, he says, what portion of the Major Spoilers websites are spoiler-free? None of it. That's why it's called Major Spoilers. I ask because I'm scared to go exploring after encountering some spoilery just navigating to download season 3 of Critical Hit. Mm-hmm. I'd like to check out other portions of the website, but I'm afraid I'm going to stumble across something better revealed while listening to the podcast. Well, then don't look at the titles of the episodes. don't just click on something and go, hey, what's in this thing? Because you'll probably see some maps of the battle. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for comic book news, we don't intentionally spoil something without saying, hey, there's a big spoiler ahead. So you've got that going for you. But we understand that there are a number of people who are listening to this episode, and this is the first time they've listened to it, and it's 5 years after the episode is recorded. So, you know, I would just say go at your own risk. Here there be monsters. Here there be dragons. So
on the site, Critical Hit is tagged as Critical Hit.
Yeah. Too. You can just go into Major Spoilers Podcast and Critical Hit. But I think he gets to an episode titled and they were never heard from again. And he's worried that that's a spoiler.
Yeah, that can be a lot of the time. The titles are misleading. So sometimes, just because you see that in a title doesn't necessarily mean that something, is going to happen or not happen. But yeah, if you're going in and you're like, oh, well, now that I'm through the second season, I want to see, like, for example, like the world building articles on that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a minefield. You kind of, especially because the most recent stuff is going to be the first to appear. So I guess just kind of go like, la, 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 and scroll as far down as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, if that's you go into the risk.
World building stuff.
And if you're wanting to jump into just a specific episode, every episode of Critical Hit has a link to the show notes for that episode. So if you're wanting to say, oh, well, I want to go see all the images for this battle, for the images that exist prior to 2010, then you just click on that link to the show notes and it'll take you just to that page where you can see the images and stuff just for that episode. So after that, if you go exploring around and you haven't listened to the episodes, I guess that's at your own risk. Nathan goes on to say, he's got a whole bunch of stuff saying how great everybody is and everything. but he does say that I generally listen while doing the dishes or some other chores. And he wanted to see if there was a way to donate. And certainly there is. And so he says, I was planning, I think he has signed up for a $2 a month donation, but he does understand that there are some different tiers and perks. And he is thinking about upgrading. But for now, he's got $2 a month perpetually. From Nathan. So thank you, Nathan, for that, for becoming a bronze member. And listeners, if you want to find out more, you can head over to Major Spoilers, or actually members.majorspoilers.com, to find out more. My name is Joseph, says Joseph. At least I hope it's Joseph. Yes. My name is Joseph, says Susan.
and that's okay.
So here's the question he has. Oh, maybe I'll ought to read the whole thing because it says it may be too long for a mailbag, but now that I read the setup, it actually probably is something important for here. My new campaign is a tricky one, to say the least. The PCs meet a guild of people who travel through time, taking out targets and essentially controlling fate. Their missions are given to them by the mysterious leader of the group, and since nobody knows this man gets the information, the PCs are led to question whether or not they should be doing what he says. The big reveal is going to be that, and I'll blank it all out here. The question is, anyway, I love hearing people's takes on time travel, so I wanted to know if there have been any time travel-based campaigns that you've particularly enjoyed, and how the DM ran time travel tropes, such as the butterfly effect, paradoxes, and meeting yourself. Thanks for the great comments, and always, Poke is the best. Rodrigo, please give your answer in Poke's voice. Let's see. Rob, have you gone through any time travel campaigns?
Other than Randus's breaking reality.
Right.
Not really. And I would probably avoid it because I hate time travel.
What? you're dead to me, Rob. Ryan, what about you?
No. And just largely because I don't know. There'd be very few DMs, I think, that'd be willing to go through that kind of difficulty and headache.
Yeah.
It would be a difficult task, and I wish this listener the best of luck.
Yeah. Now, we don't normally recommend a lot of other podcasts, but Cthulhu and Friends, in their first season, they have a thing where they're actually jumped forward in time. That's kind of a spoiler for the first season if you've never listened to it. They don't travel back in time, so they don't go back to where they started, but there are major jumps to different time periods going forward. That's part of the narrative and part of what's going on with some of the stuff in that story. And that is kind of interesting, but it's also kind of jarring. Yeah. So I guess maybe that's something you could listen to, but I've not really had any time travel, RPG stuff. Sam?
I'm trying to think, like, the closest I've come personally was probably a mage character I played who had a lot of time magic, though hers was mostly like seeing the future and the past, and she was really bad at it, so that sometimes it was like, I think there was one time where I got stuck and the GM told all the other players ahead of time that like I was going to be having like a weird terrible time thing and to just go along with what he was doing, and I didn't realize that's what everyone was doing for like 20 minutes. So that was quite a thing.
Nice.
George Chimples, of, Lizard People, Dear Readers, was a ST at a Gen Con event, where it was a Call of Cthulhu game, and which I didn't get to participate in, but sounded sweet, where people were moving around in time. And the way they did that, which is really only feasible at a big con, is there were many different tables, and periodically someone would like get like a facilitator would pull someone off a table and move them to a different table. And it's like, oh, well, previously I was in the 1920s.
Yeah.
Now I'm in like caveman time. What is going on?
Do you remember what year that was when you did that?
Oh God. I think
it kept changing.
I It wasn't last year because he wasn't at Gen Con last year. I think it was 2 years ago. I'd recommend, you know, maybe leaving a comment on Lizard People Dear Readers and trying to get in touch with George.
Yeah. And he writes for the site, and he's actually was in the beginning part of this season. So, he's around. Matthew or Rodrigo, do you have any time travel gaming experience?
I have a dumb one.
Okay.
It was really dumb. Right. It was a point
where...
Was it
a Doctor Who one?
No. It was actually Dungeons and Dragons, but it was a game where the Dungeon Master didn't have really any limitations to the stupid crap that he let us try to get away with, and then he'd let us hang ourselves. My character had come into possession of a wand that had a number of random effects. So we somehow ended up in a time travel glitch where we had to fight ourselves as we entered the dungeon we were in. And I used my random spell and created a third version of myself. So there were two of everyone and three of me. And at the end, we all were dead except for one version of each person. And no one was entirely sure which was which, or whether the original one of us, and of course, in my case, there was even a lower chance that it was the original who survived. But at that point, the six of us decided that since there was one of each, we could just go on and do what we did and somehow kept from ever creating the time vortex in the first place. It was a great game. It was terrible for rules. It was terrible for discipline, but it was a heck of a lot of fun. And I got to kill myself twice. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah,
it was nice. Beautiful. It was glorious chaos, and I loved every minute of it.
Poke?
I'd rather not if it's all the same.
I think that what he's trying to say is that this hurts when you do it for a long period of time. Because the back of your throat gets all dry and then you're like, oh crap, that hurts.
I have to prime it. I've done a few things. I obviously there was the whole Penelope's chronometer thing where it's like you kind of like shatter everybody's timeline and like reassemble it individually, which I wouldn't necessarily recommend because apparently it's super confusing. Most of the time travel stuff I've done is kind of like I ran a game once where somebody else travels back in time and the players are present when that happens. So suddenly they, because of the anomalies involved, find themselves in an alternate timeline. So they kind of have to figure out a way to kind of restart the time vortex and go back and stop that person from going back to begin with, because obviously, as all alternate timelines are, this one is terrible, right? So that's about the extent of it. You know, I've had, you know, things where it's like maybe a particular NPC may be a future version or of one of the characters, and that kind of gets put up but never really resolved. Kind of like a like that Dumbledore fan theory. But that's about it. Usually, like a game that involves time travel is extremely difficult because when you're writing time travel, and you're like, and then this happens, and then this happens. It's like, oh, I know. I'm going to write something in beforehand so that this seems like a more time travel-y thing. That's not that hard. But in a game where everybody's shared experience has already happened, it becomes extremely difficult.
Someone had sent an email going, you guys never read any hate mail on your show. You guys never read any hate mail. Why is that? Oh, it's like, okay, well, here's a piece of hate mail for you.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say that I will probably no longer be listening to your show. I started listening to the show because someone had suggested it to me, so I started from episode one and listened as you guide plays through fourth edition. I thought this show will be so awesome to listen once they get to fifth edition. Then I found out that you guys weren't going to be converting. I wish you guys the best of luck, but I'm not a fan of fourth edition. I think I'll find something that is fifth edition focused to listen to. Thanks for entertaining me up till now. Well, I guess
thanks
here's
for
what
listening
I have.
Up till now.
Yeah, thanks for listening up to now, but here's the thing that I find so funny. That reasoning, and we've said straight up that this would be a fourth edition game until these guys finished level 30, right? But what I find so funny in this is it is the equivalent of saying, Rob, thanks for taking me out in your Mustang last night. It was so fun. You drove so fast. You handled it so well. I laughed. I was scared. I was crying because I had so much fun. It was a blast. Wait, you're not going to get the 2017 Mustang? Forget you. I'm never going with a ride with you ever again. That's what it kind of feels like. And it's like, well, if you've enjoyed the story and you enjoy what the characters are doing, it almost seems like the twiddly bits under the hood shouldn't be that big of a deal. But apparently, whether you're playing 4th edition or 5th edition is a big deal for people. Rob?
Is for nerds, edition wars happen.
I know, right?
It's like, oh, you want 5th edition? Okay. There's other people there for it.
Yeah.
And
that's fine. That's fine. You know?
What Rodrigo's got set up, as he said multiple times, would not work in another system. Changing systems is a problem for the story.
I just find that the argument of, well, my enjoyment of your show is now over since you're not going to convert to this next great system is just rather a weak argument.
It's an argument based on the expectation that the game is only meaningful when it's current. And, that's the way people look at things, and that's perfectly legitimate and fine. But I think it's kind of the equivalent of, as a comic book nerd, if you come to me and say, I really, really love these Batman stories. And I'm like, have you read this Batman story that is like a classic from 1979? No, that's not the same Batman. I only read New 52 Batman. That's great. That is perfectly legitimate. But it does, I think, limit your experiences. And I think it limits the enjoyment that you can have or could have with things that are a little bit out of that window. So, have a great time with 5th edition. We may eventually join you someday in 5th edition, right about the time 6th edition comes out, I'm sure.
Or maybe we'll just get a jump all the way over to 6th edition.
Jump over to Exalted.
There you go.
Yep. Monkey Leaf Technique
process
to Exalted.
That you can at least understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
All right,
if we're going to Exalted, then I'm going to play Davy Jones.
Here's a quick question from Aaron. He says, I'm listening to Critical Hit and trying to get caught up. I was wondering if Rodrigo's inspiration for the other dimensions in this season is Planeswalker based.
No.
All right. There you go. Quick question. And I think that wraps it up for this installment of Critical Hit. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. If you do have questions, podcast@majorspoilers.com. I don't care if it's hate mail or fan mail or whatever. You can send it to podcast@majorspoilers.com. We do read it all, but only the best get on this show. Thank you so much, everyone, for downloading and listening and sharing this. And please tell your friends about it, whether they're interested in 4th edition or not. I think this is a great, incredible story, and I'm in it for the story, not necessarily the mechanics, because I think by now we all understand the mechanics. Or at least I do. I understand the game. I see how it plays.
Yeah, I don't think he's saying that you don't. I think that collectively there's still some gaps.
Yes. Yes.
We all understand the mechanics, just for some reason struck me right in the funny bone.
Oh yes, I'm sure for you it would. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment LLC.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.